top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies podcast, a celebration of genre cinema.
Girls from out of town?
We're staying over there in my cousin's place. We were looking for beavers.
Well, hell, ain't we all?
Well, I've had enough excitement for one day. What was that? Someone in there?
There's a beaver in the bathroom! Kill it!
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here is episode 458 of the Really Awful Movies podcast, 2014 Zombievers. Another one of these portmanteau movies, although this time not having a shark, like a Sharktopus or a Sharknado or a Dino Shark or one of these types of films, but very similar in terms of spirit to those efforts. This one is kind of a weird combination of Piranha 3D, Night of the Lepus, I think a little bit of Larry Fessenden's Beneath, and then there's a Canadian horror called Raiders of the Lost Shark. So it bears kind of a resemblance to these ones. It's a short production, short runtime. I think this one was lensed over the course of 2 or 3 weeks and features that exemplary deus ex machina prime mover narrative event that happens in the beginning, which is, of course, the transportation of toxic chemicals and the dangers that are inherent therein, something that I think Trauma obviously explored as probably the best known, more recent example from its Toxic Avenger movies. But of course, this is something that caused many creature feature to get started from the 60s up until today. And this one falls broadly into that category again, once again, of nature run amok and eco-horror, but with, of course, that silliness and a little bit of self-awareness that comes from kind of these movies that were lensed in the post-Scream era, but not, I think, an overabundance and over too much of a surfeit of self-involvement or irony to really ruin the proceedings. And I think this one has enough to commend it that it's worth checking out. And what struck me at the beginning was, of all people, Bill Burr driving the truck carrying this dangerous cargo. And it's funny because if you are familiar with the comedian's work and his solo podcast, which is actually quite good, he's one of the rare comedians that doesn't need foil and can do podcasts on his own and will frequently do them from hotel rooms while he's on tour and stuff. So he's really quite a talented fellow in that regard and doesn't have this kind of jocular camaraderie team type of podcast. It's quite good, but it's funny that, to the best of my knowledge, he's not talked about the lensing of this one and his participation therein, whereas he has talked about what it was like to work on the Breaking Bad set, where similarly, well, actually he plays a criminal, but in Breaking Bad, if you're familiar with it, he plays a character who's enlisted to pretend to be like a state environmental protection agency official in that regard. So it's kind of funny how that ladders back to this, and this was something he did 2 years prior to getting cast in Breaking Bad. So it's quite funny, and there's a neat little bit of repartee between Bill Burr's character and the fellow driver, these sort of redneck trucker backwoods stereotype kinds of characters, blue collar. These guys strike a deer, and of course one of their the precious cargo rolls out and spills downstream. And what should happen? Well, I mean, we've seen this movie before. In the 70s, it was something like a piranha. There's always kind of evil corporate entity that sends nature into an imbalance. And in the case of Zombievers, I mean, what do you expect, right? When you have the mix of toxic chemicals and mammals, we we've seen that movie before. We've seen what happens in the superhero movies, and we've seen what happens throughout the eco-horror from 60s to today. And the principles involved here, of course, you have to send these cute college co-eds out into the wilderness to be victims of this creature, and sort of, I can't remember exactly, I think the best of the bunch of the ones I listed here, you could arguably make a case for Piranha 3D for its just sheer garish and ostentatious kind of cinematography and look, and bikinis galore and just bodies all over the place, and this one similarly has what one of the characters refers to as the bone zone, so that there is a lot of sexuality and a lot of, you know, T&A in this one too. But I think the best of the bunch would probably be the kind of understated Larry Fessenden production Beneath, which features of all things a killer catfish on the loose, and is effective because I think the location really lends itself to that kind of, it's something that really I think kind of will resonate with you if you're in the Northeast or if you tend to go camping and whatnot. Whereas I think what causes a bit of a debit to Zombievers is just the standard California lens. You could tell this one was shot probably on a studio back lot. I think the location was Santa Clarita near a Disney studio, so it definitely has this like just outside of close to Hollywood kind of look, although obviously not executed as such, because this is a very, very small budget, micro-budget production, and despite that, managed to get a premiere at Robert De Niro's Tribeca Festival way back, cast your minds back 10 years to 2014, which is pretty surprising for a film of this type, which, you know, has as its cover art floating dock and this, you know, angry-looking beaver, and it's like, you know, it conjures up, obviously, a Naked Gun and Priscilla Presley's interlocution with the late, great Leslie Nielsen, an awesome Canadian, speaking of beavers, nice beaver, thanks, I just got it stuffed, and yes, there are numerous references and suggestions and double entendres about beavers, and one of the characters, Mary, Zoe, or Jen, they're fairly interchangeable, makes a remark to the effect, breaking the fourth wall and saying something to the effect of that's enough with the beaver jokes because it's getting a little tired. But so, as I alluded to, these co-eds, Mary, Zoe, and Jen, Zoe being the exhibitionist one amongst the group, who doffs her top within the first 5 minutes as the credits roll, and they arrive at their cousin's cabin near this beaver dam, and of course this is where the accident occurred with the van, and the barrel rolled into the nearest stream, upstream, and of course, this is also par for the course in terms of horror tropes, and something we've seen in the 80s is when you try and isolate a bunch of women to have some sort of party, then there inevitably some boys will happen upon the proceedings. This has happened in the case of Friday the 13th, but countless other films, whenever there's some sort of party, you unite the genders together, and it makes for a better time. And of course, there's discord and acrimony because one of the principals you don't want there because of a lover's quarrel and spat. And that's kind of par for the course for these types of films, but that doesn't make this any less fun just by the sheer audaciousness of having a killer beaver as the antagonist. And similar to, I think, if you're a fan of something like A Night of the Lepus from the mid-70s, where you have these oversized killer bunnies, very unconvincingly depicted, shall we say, I think you will like this one as well. So this is directed by Jordan Rubin, who stars and co-stars as, I think, one of the boyfriends. I think it's Buck. So there's Buck, Tommy, Sam, Mary, Zoe, and Jen. And, you know, lots of excuses to head down by the lake, doff your tops, get into your bikini bottoms and tops, and lots of great eye candy. As an aside, it's weird how beavers became so inextricably linked to Canada and Canadiana. There's I think it's a pastry brand called the Beaver Tails, and it's this kind of flaked pastry sugary thing. I've never even had one, but they're fairly ubiquitous in Canada. But I think if anything, the raccoon has eclipsed its mammalian cousin in terms of the de facto mascot of this country, and certainly my city. And I was just thinking that when I saw one wander out onto the street that looked very, very well fed. I live near tons of restaurants downtown, and these things like feed in the dumpsters. And I think it's the mascot for a local airline here in Toronto by the city airport. And they're just such part and parcel trash pandas, as they're frequently maligned, of the landscape here and part of popular culture. It's funny when you think about beavers and references to, south of the Mason-Dixon line. Okay, south of the hips, shall we say. It's such a dated expression, and it's funny, if not given all the other idioms you have for that area, I could rattle off a whole bunch, but it's one that sort of has fallen out of favor in much the same way, I think, as the term B-movie has. So it's weird that these characters would actually make beaver jokes, because it just doesn't, it seems like something you'd hear in the 80s, and which you did hear in the 80s, so, but anyway. What you also have is one of these rustics come upon these girls and provide a warning that they shouldn't be so scantily clad because there's lots of family folk around. And this is the character of Smith, spelled with a Y. He's a local hunter, and he gives them pardon the expression, a dressing down, because they're pretty dressed down already, and says, please, ladies, like, we've got older folks and families here. And he at one point scares off a bear and tells the girls to be mindful as they're camping in this cabin, which is weird because I don't think California has any bears anymore, despite it being on the state flag. Maybe they do in the north, but I think they've probably, if I'm not mistaken, have been hunted to extinction. Anyway, once the beavers begin to attack, then that's where we get a bunch of kind of good and super fun practical effects, as I think befits the budget and befits the appeal of this one, which I think puts it in a different category from the Sharknadoes and that, which are heavily reliant on CG. And I think it gives this kind of a more plucky, spunky, indie feel when you have these kinds of, maybe they used animatronics, but probably just simple models and practical effects that is super fun, especially when one of them, I believe Jen, when she takes off her clothes in the bathroom, they're sharing a bathroom, these six people, and one of the killer beavers emerges from under the sink, and Tommy, I believe, batters it with a baseball bat, and this is the kind of thing we're dealing with here. And as I said, this is fun animal attack, nature run amok fair with characters that are obviously overly horny and coming together for the sole purpose of ratcheting up the body count, but also to sexualize this one and give the Zoe character, played by Courtney Palm, lots of opportunities to get naked and to show her tits, and you get all this kinds of rowdy, randy behavior while the killer animals are on the loose. And this makes for fun fare too, because at 85 minutes you can't fault this thing for really knowing what it is and not trying to make a case that it's anything but something that's just dumb, dim-witted, fun fare. Just silly nonsense that I think is really good if you just are, if it's a rainy day like today and you just need something on in the background. But I think that's giving it a bit of short shrift, because I think this does have, it is fairly well written and the characters are fairly well defined, despite being your standard horn dogs that between 20 and 22 or whatever they're meant to be. I think this has a lot going for it, by no means a classic that will see it in the upper echelons of one of the better animal horror run amok films like a Jaws or an Alligator or something, or something that's associated with the likes of John Sayles or somebody. But it's definitely in the middle of the pack somewhere and knows what it is and what it isn't. And I think that's super fun and just basically a retread and retelling of something like a Grizzly from 1976. But a lot of sort of good commentary as well, and a little bit of banter back and forth, and generally a good time, all things considered. One of the things I've learned here is that there's I think fairly obvious allusions to Night of the Living Dead, but I think more so the 1990 version, where there's they make sport of the constant barricading of these characters, and they said one of them in a very meta way points out that there's no sense barricading themselves in with pieces of wood, because obviously beavers can gnaw through it, so you're better off with sheet metal, I think one of the characters quips. So there is a self-referential quality to this. And there's lots of good violence and stabbings and nudity and fun stuff for what seems like a one-off or a one-joke kind of one-note fair. But it is fun, it is silly, it is super goofy, but it's somehow in a strange kind of way endearing, in much the same way I think Beneath is, which came out, I believe, a year prior. And obviously Larry Fessenden's a much more seasoned and better filmmaker here than Mr. Jordan Rubin, but there's still that kind of that kind of sense of indie sensibility and kind of a DIY ethos that I think will, that does in fact serve this one in good stead. And a quick podcast this week, as I'm fairly busy here with lots of things to tend to, but I think if you're a fan of this genre, you'll probably give this one a 3.25, if not a 3. It definitely hits the mark more often than it misses, and I think you'll enjoy it. And anyway, continue to listen to the podcast. We'll be back with a more fulsome, longer form effort next week, and I'll talk to you soon. Take care. Thank you.